All right, welcome to the Free Stretch, first post-game edition of the season, Victory Friday edition. I'm Bobby Fenton. Thank you for joining us as I record the show here on Friday morning, post-Bucks victory as they beat the Cowboys 31-29 in the 2021 season opener in front of a sold-out crowd, in front of a national television audience. And what a show the two teams put on. It was a great game. It was definitely entertaining. And, of course, as a Bucks fan, more so, but even if you were just your regular football viewer tuning in for the first football game of the 2021 season, I think you went to bed pretty satisfied and pretty excited about the rest of the season, because we got top shelf stuff from both quarterbacks, from both teams, an exciting finish, and of course the good guys are 1-0, which, just so you know, the Bucks have never won a Super Bowl after starting 1-0, but you know, hey. Breaking new ground is always a thing, so the Bucks get that win after what... Honestly, you could say the Bucks won a game they shouldn't have won, and you could also say they also almost lost a game they had no business losing. That they both should never have lost that game, and they both should never have won that game, in a way. When you look at some of the things that happened with turnovers and things like that, and we'll go over some of the stats here, the Bucks did break some historical norms in having four turnovers, a minus three turnover ratio, giving up over 400 yards, the penalties. We'll get into all of that, and still winning. On the other hand, you know, if we hold on to the football a little better, and, you know, Chris Godwin fumbles with what should have been the go-ahead, or they were already ahead, but should have been the put-away touchdown. We obviously had the interception off Fournette's hands and stuff like that. And the Bucs, really, without those things, win that game easily, cover the spread, all those things. But it doesn't matter, because they got it done. And so the big takeaway, well, actually, you know what? Hold that thought for a moment, because we'll get to all those things. There's a few big takeaways, but there was one main big takeaway for me. But thank you for joining us here on this Friday morning. And you may be listening to this over the weekend or even into next week. This is just when I'm recording it. But I appreciate it. Thanks to Joe Bucksfan for giving me the platform, as always, to be on this website, the best place anywhere for Bucks coverage. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. Hey, I had the fantasy draft. I represented Joe Bucksfan because the Joes were unable to be there in the Todd Wright Fantasy League. And we did it on the showroom floor at Bill Curry Ford. I had a hell of a draft, even though I'm not even a fantasy guy. I just show up, and I think I graded out like an A- or something. But had a lot of fun. Sean Sullivan, the GM, was there. By the way, Bill Curry Ford's been there for 60 years now, and it's still going to be there a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry. But they are doing major renovations. They're going to be leveling the whole place practically. Not leveling it, but like completely redoing it, redesigning it. And it's going to be a Tampa icon right there on Dale Mabry, even more so than it already is. But even if you don't even want to go there, just go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. It's spelled C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. Whether you go in person or do it online, brand new, used, pre-owned, whatever you want to call it, all covered, okay? You buy a car there, nationwide, unlimited lifetime powertrain warranty. You have engine trouble or anything with the car down the road, as long as you own it. You bought it at Bill Curry Ford, bring it back to the service center, which is also getting redone, and you're completely covered. So check out everything they're doing over there at Bill Curry Ford. Again, the website, BillCurryFord.com, and thanks to them. So, oh, email. If you want to email me, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com. Same thing on Twitter. You can tweet me at BobbyGameDay. Follow me there. Now, my one big takeaway from last night of everything else, okay, is that it's really nice, like it's really, really nice to have the ball on your own 25-yard line with less than 90 seconds to play and only one timeout, and still feel completely calm, and in fact feel like you're the favorite. Like, I felt like the Bucks were the favorite after Dallas hit the game-winning field goal. Dallas did not succeed in taking enough time off the clock, which should have been one of their goals, and they mismanaged that a little bit. And penalties didn't help them either, because those stopped the clock. But when we got the ball on our own 25, minute 24 to go, one timeout, I mean, I wasn't just hoping we'd win. I felt like if I had to bet my life on one outcome or the other, I would have bet on us to win. And I can't say that's been true. And I'm always optimistic, but like, would you really, in other years, even with good Bucks teams in the past, has that ever really been true? Like, I would have rather been the Bucks down two with the ball in their own 25, less than a minute and a half left, and been up to, but been on defense there. And that's not for any one specific person, but it's kind of a lot to do with one specific person. And that's because, you know, we, and not just us, but nobody's ever had a quarterback like Tom Brady. He didn't do it alone, but it's a really nice feeling when you get in those situations. And I wasn't even nervous. I was like, oh, yeah, I mean, we, you know, we should get this in a field goal range. I was more nervous about the idea of how close we get. And was it going to be like a 48-yard game-winning attempt or a 38-yard game-winning attempt, you know, that type of thing. But there was no doubt in my mind that we were going to attempt and, you know, line up for a game-winning field goal. And it came to pass, and Succop nailed it, and the Bucs won 31-29 in a game that, yes, they should not have had to have been running the two-minute drill, trailing in the fourth quarter, but nonetheless succeeded when they were tasked with doing so. So that was my big takeaway. And I'll tell you, that final drive, I mean, there were some key plays. I was still a little bit nervous. I wasn't nervous when we started the drive. Then we hit the 8-yard pass to Giovanni Bernard, who didn't, there were a lot of third downs before that final drive, and he didn't seem to factor much, but then the last drive he was in there. So they hit him on second down. Or no, it was third down. It was third and two, and they hit him for a 4-yard gain. I got nervous on that third and two. Like, we hit an 8-yard pass, then we had an incompletion, and then it was third and two. At this point, we were on our own 33, and I was like, you know, we better get that. I don't want to face fourth and two. Like, that feels like, you know, they hit Bernard out of the backfield. He gets open. Really nice throw by Brady to throw it away from the defender that was coming at Bernard, kind of low and away, and Bernard makes the catch, gets ahead for the yards he needed. First down. That was a key play because you didn't want any part of fourth and two. Then a couple plays later, second and nine. Now we're at our own 38. We had had the false start penalty by Donovan Smith, but then we'd picked up 6 yards on a shorter pass to Gronkowski. But on second and nine, they go right back to Gronkowski, this time for 20. That's when I knew we were going to win. If we weren't in field goal range yet, that play got them, I think, to like the 42, 41, something like that. So they were still, at that point, it was a 60-yard field goal. But I also felt like, okay, we're going to get into field goal range and we're going to win this now, which is exactly what happened. And how about Rob Gronkowski, by the way? I mean, first of all, 8 targets in that game, 8 catches. It's only the third time in his career he's been targeted that many times and had a perfect night. He had a night in 2014 or a day, whatever, in 2014 where he had 9 targets with 9 catches. And then one other time he had 8 targets and 8 catches. But he was targeted all every time he was. He got the ball, secured it, had 8 catches for 90 yards and 2 touchdowns. And even aside from the 2 touchdowns, there might not have been any bigger than that one in the fourth quarter because he got them down in there, again, close to field goal range. And then following an incompletion, it was 2nd and 10. That was when they hit the big play to Godwin up the left sideline, and that got him to the Dallas 18. And that set up the 36-yard field goal. I did not believe there was any issue with not calling offensive pass interference. And I'm always the first one to say it, regardless of which way it goes, whether it helps the team I'm rooting for or whether it hurts the team I'm rooting for. And there was a little bit of arm extension there. It's really easy to see in slow motion, but in fast motion, that play is not something you're going to see called at all. And what's also really easy to see in slow motion is that the Dallas defender had his hands wrapped around Godwin, and Godwin, yeah, he gets him off of him, which he has every right to do. The guy was kind of on his heels, a little off balance, went down harder than I think Godwin's nudge merited. These are all things, again, you break down frame by frame in slow-mo. In no way was that some egregious missed OPI where you see it in real time and you're screaming at the TV. I think Dallas fans complaining about that are reaching pretty hard, so no problem with that. Good receivers know how to do that. They know how to create that extra separation without making it look too obvious or too egregious. And Godwin did a great job there making up for that fumble at the goal line, which, man, that, like, we literally, and this is, you know, at that point, still several minutes left in the game, but we win. If he scores he scores a touchdown, we win. And you know it. And then he fumbled, and I'm like, oh, my God. Like, we're going to give these guys the ball with a 2-point deficit, and they're going to go down and kick a field goal now? Are we really, like, trying to blow this? And the Bucs did. I mean, the Bucs tried in several ways to give that game away and luckily came back every time and found a way to save it. And so the big pass to Godwin there was a really nice play by him, and that set it up the 36-yard field goal, which was good. So you know, there were good things and bad things, and it's one game. I cannot stress this enough to everybody. And I say this all the time when I'm talking about whether it's the Lightning, the Rays, the Bucks. You know, football's got the shortest regular season where the games individually matter more than any other sport. But even in football, you know, you're not going to remember this. Like, this week one game, you know, 3 weeks from now, let alone 2 months from now, is going to seem like ancient history. So I'm not going to go into, oh, this looked good. I'm worried about this. I'm not worried about that. I mean, look at the Super Bowl season last year. I mean, again, there was no reason to believe when the Saints were running up one side and down the other, you know, in that Sunday night game and doing all these things. There was a list of longer than the damn field itself of things wrong with the Bucs at that point, or things that you should be concerned about, and Bucs went on to win the Super Bowl. You know, same thing after the first half of the Chiefs game. We're getting worked. It was a complete blowout. Bucs came back in the second half and still lost, but we would have been foolish to break down every little thing and be like, oh, this portends this and this portends that. So don't get wrapped up in that. Yes, there are things they need to improve upon, but it's week one. Just get the wins, because those are what last. Those are what actually count in the standings, and you can fix some other things. So first we'll go over, I guess, the bad things, because I like to end on the good things. And there was plenty of both last night, because it was just a very, very high activity game. Like, a lot of stuff happened last night. And football games are long. Lots of stuff happens in them. But last night, even as football games go, had even more. But for the minuses, and you could actually even say this might be a plus. I don't know what you want to call this. But here's a stat. First time in NFL history that this happened last night. The Bucs are the first team in NFL history to have 100 penalty yards. They had 106. To have a -3 turnover margin. The turnover margin, admittedly, they had the Hail Mary, which barely counts. I mean, it counts officially, but anyway, technically it's a turnover. 100 yards in penalties, -3 turnover margin, and allow 450 yards of offense to the other team and still win the football game. That had literally never happened in NFL history until the Bucs did it last night. And in fact, those three things that I just named, those three bad things, only 9 times in NFL history prior had any team combined to do all three of those things in a game. They were 0-9 in those 9 instances. But the Bucs go ahead and get the win. Before last night, just talking turnovers, the Bucs franchise, 9-65 all-time when having 4 turnovers. And when having a -3 turnover margin, 5-61 all-time, the Bucs franchise. And again, you have to qualify anything with the turnovers as far as the Hail Mary at the end of the first half, which is a technical interception, but really doesn't count. It's no different than it had been an incomplete pass or if they took a knee or whatever. So you want to call it a 3 turnover night, -2 turnover margin. That technically is fine, but, you know, the other 3 turnovers all have the ability to be pretty costly. And I'll say this much. You know, the defense wasn't great last night. Our pass rush wasn't getting anywhere. I mean, Shaq Barrett did come alive later and got the 1 sack, and they got some pressure later in the game. We'll talk more about Vita Vea in the positive section of the show, because there's plenty there. But, you know, when you combine the lack of a pass rush, and they got some hurries even without the sacks. It's not all about sacks, but they didn't get much. I mean, Dak was impressive as hell. But you combine that with the secondary, first of all, having Sean Murphy Bunting go out, and they're thin there to begin with. Number two, Murphy Bunting wasn't playing that well to begin with. And number three, the secondary as a whole, I mean, I thought Carlton Davis had a good game. Jamel Dean was getting roasted. SMB, before he got hurt, was not playing that well. Not that I want to, you know, say bad stuff about him because he got hurt. You know, the secondary and the pass rush both not really having their best night, and you give up as many field goals as touchdowns, and you keep them under 30 points, pretty okay to me. I mean, that could have, if you had told me those things before the game, like, hey man, you guys are not going to have a lot of success with the pass rush. You're not going to get home much. Dak's going to kind of have his way, and oh, by the way, you're going to lose SMB early in the game, and your secondary is not going to play that well to begin with anyhow. I would be like, oh my God, we're going to get like 40-something points. This is going to be a total track meet. And the defense found ways, and I'll tell you what it really comes down to. And this is, like, in football, there's so many stats, there's so many things that people say, this is what matters. You know, people say, oh, turnovers, you know, and all those things matter. But the one I think people don't talk enough about is red zone, both conversion rate on offense and preventing conversions on defense, because that was where the Bucs won the game last night. They bowed up a couple times in big spots. And I call them four-point plays. Four-point plays are when it's a third down. Usually, I mean, I don't consider a third and four from like the 28 a four-point play. But once they get inside the 20, or especially inside the 15 or 10, and the other team has a third and whatever, that's a four-point play. You get the stop, they're kicking a field goal for three. You let them get the first down or the touchdown, they're getting a touchdown. Like, that's usually what happens. So the Bucs had four instances of four-point plays come up last night, and they were successful on three of them. Dallas scored on one of them, and the other three times the Bucs got big stops, and one of those times Dallas missed the field goal. So if you look at it all together, I mean, that to me was the difference. And Andrew Adams, I'll tell you what, you know, he had three interceptions against the Panthers before. Then he got cut by the Bucs and went somewhere. It was the Jets he was with, and he got cut in training camp with the Jets, and we brought him back last week. And just on the practice squad, then Jordan Whitehead can't go. We bring him in. He had a big game last night, and the biggest play he made was earlier in the game. Not early. It was the second quarter, I think. Second or third quarter. And the Cowboys had a four-point play. They had a third and goal from whatever it was, the four or the five, something like that. And they run a play where they pitch to Ezekiel Elliott going outside left. And Elliott, they got the look they wanted. I mean, they had Elliott alone, and Andrew Adams was blocked by a tight end, and there was nobody else. So it was basically the runner with a blocker against one guy. Adams shook the tight end block, then still had to stop Ezekiel Elliott in the open field, which is no bargain, and made a great tackle, threw him onto the ground about the 3-4 yard line, four-point play in a two-point game, right? And they got the stop, and the Bucs were 3-for-4 on those. And, I mean, red zone, folks. I mean, red zone, like, those are the differences. And those little things, you know, that's 4 points at a time in these close games, and the Bucs defense did a good job on that. So even though it wasn't the best night ever for the defense altogether, they were good when it counted, and they kept, I mean, if you told me before the game Dallas was going to score 29 points, I think I would have taken that. It's probably a little more than I would have hoped for, but if you'd said, will you take that, I think I would have, because I thought the Bucs could do some damage against the Dallas defense, and quite honestly, they did, and they didn't score as many points as they should have because of the turnovers, but luckily, they were able to overcome that. So back to the negatives, like I said, the turnovers, okay. Leonard Fournette and Ronald Jones at running back, you know, Ronald Jones had the fumble. He got put in the doghouse rest of the night, didn't hear from him again. Fournette was able to overcome his turnover, which was the ball bouncing off his hands, and stay in the game. He actually did make a nice catch where he actually went up and won a contested ball, which you just trying to get Leonard Fournette to catch a ball like alone, like from 5 yards away, is like, you're happy if you can do that. So to see him on the sideline go up and like apex one there was pretty cool later on. But that, you know, that was a really big turnover because they had him in the open field. They had a screen pass well set up. He had a convoy of blockers. But man, like, we just, our running backs really don't catch the ball well. And we knew this. That's why we got Giovanni Bernard. It was not a third down play when the Fournette turnover happened. But that was just, I mean, that game could have been pretty well in hand pretty early in the second half. Without the Rojo fumble, without the Fournette deflection off his hands, you know, those things kept Dallas in the game. And then, of course, the game would have been over if Godwin scores on the touchdown. But luckily, he made up for that later on the fourth quarter drive. So the running backs, you know, I people are on Twitter and everything, like, crucifying the running backs, thinking, oh, what's going to happen now? Nothing's going to happen now. Like, Ronald Jones will be back there again next week. Fournette, I still think Jones will be featured more. And, you know, week by week, it could change. But the main thing is, like I've said before about running backs, it really isn't that important what they do in the running game. Bucs couldn't get the running game going at all last night. It was fine. But they need to be able to help you in the passing game, or at the very least not hurt you in the passing game. And so that's something that, you know, if you're looking for negatives last night, that would be one as well. But enough about the negatives, because the Bucs overcame all those. What were some of the positives, aside from the obvious one, which is, you know, Tom Brady, who, at age 44 here, and somebody on Twitter, I one of the Pro Football Focus guys was tweeting out after the game. He's like, yeah, Tom Brady at 16-1 for MVP. And not that I'm saying he's going to win MVP. He's like, but that's some really good value. It's not there now, but you could have gotten that before the game started yesterday. Because it's not just that he played well. It's that his actual throws look really good. Like, this pliability thing, I'm buying in. Like, yeah, how can you not with the results? I'm going to go out and buy a bunch of elastic bands and dump all my weights into the Hillsborough River. Because he's just zip, zip, zip. And same thing Gronkowski. Like, Gronkowski, yeah, I didn't realize this, but if you look up their birthdays, Gronkowski is only like 6 months older than Travis Kelce. And he's supposedly, top guy in the NFL in his physical prime, blah, blah, blah. And they're not different age-wise. So maybe Gronkowski's got this, as long as Brady's going, and maybe Gronkowski's going too, maybe there's this whole second half of his career thing. We thought, oh, he's just going to come back and, maybe he can help us a little bit. He was a force, complete force. In general, Antonio Brown, I forgot about Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown, folks. Listen, you don't want to get too excited. Antonio Brown's a wild card, you never know. But he may end up being, if he isn't already, he may be the best of the three receivers that are our top three. And he, having him in good shape, having him injury free, having him clutter free off the field with his mind or anything going on in his life, and having him having been here a year now and knowing this, knowing Brady better, knowing the guys, playing a full season. We might be sitting on a powder keg with Antonio Brown. I mean the good kind, not the bad kind. So that was really nice to see. But every week it'll be different. Like, Evans was pretty quiet, had three catches, had a couple others that were right to him but got deflected at the last second, and he didn't get his hands where it needed to be. But, another week he might be a total monster and you don't hear from Antonio Brown. Same with Godwin. That's the best part about having the receiving core that they have, is that, you don't need them all to be studs every week. On any given week, one of them could be, though. Scotty Miller barely played. He caught one pass, then the play got blown dead because the Bucs had jumped right before the snap. But, we're only scratching the surface with our receivers. And, of course, to see what they got from the tight end position was cool. And Gronkowski kind of just took over there. O.J. Howard barely played. I think he played like five snaps. And that's only four more than Vita Vea had on offense when he came in at fullback. And speaking of Vita Vea, because the pass rush in general, we kind of, poo-pooed in the negatives column. But Vita Vea, and this is why you have to look at pressures. Vita Vea didn't have a sack. Vita Vea didn't have a tackle, I don't think, officially. So if you just look at the score sheet, you don't see much. But Vita Vea was absolutely manhandling very large men. Like, obviously he's a very large man. But it ain't like the guy, like the Dallas center, weighs 316 pounds. Can you imagine? Go back and look. If you have a chance, if you DVR the game, or you can probably go on YouTube and watch footage of it. Go back and look, especially in the fourth quarter, at Vita Vea just absolutely wrecking shop. Because this is a 300-plus pound man he's going up against. And imagine if you're that guy, or any center in the NFL that plays against the Bucs, and having to block Vita Vea for one play, okay? Now imagine, that's just your job. That now you 50-plus plays. Here's Vita just lining up right on your face mask every single play. I can't even imagine. Even the plays where he doesn't technically beat his guy, like he never gets around his guy, like he just literally moves the center into the quarterback. If he can't personally get his hands on the quarterback, he will move the center kind of like a human shield and just physically move the entire, pocket backward. And he did that against Dak on one play in the fourth quarter where, literally pushed him into Dak. Another play, he got held, didn't call. Then he did draw one holding penalty. The refereeing, I thought they called too much stuff, period. But I also thought they were holding. And when you have a guy like Vita Vea, he's going to get held. I know referees, it's kind of a predicament because you want to call the rule book, but you can't call holding every play, right? Like, can I literally just call holding on the center every play? Because Vita Vea was killing people. So, and listen, his pass rush win rate, if you're into the advanced stats, has been the best. Even Aaron Donald doesn't have one like that. Aaron Donald and Vita Vea aren't exactly the same. They don't, Vita Vea straight up knows Aaron Donald's more of a three technique guy. But what point is, there's nobody in the league doing things like that. Like, it's just unbelievable. So that was something that was really good to see. And obviously last season, you know, he had the injury and they missed him for all that time. And he came back at the very end and had an impact. And you just hope he can stay healthy and be that impactful every game. Because even on a night where it's kind of an off night for the pass rush, he was still disrupting people. Tryon had a couple tackles, played pretty well. I thought he did had a decent game. He didn't have any, you know, breathtaking spin moves to sack Dak Prescott or anything like that. But for his first real game in the NFL, thought he looked pretty good. Like I said, it was good to see Shaq Barrett get the sack. He had the lone sack of the night for the Bucs. Other positives, special teams. Gotta talk special teams because, and I just suck up making the one field goal, the game winner, but he was 4-for-4 on touchbacks. How about Bradley Pinion? The opening punt, 65 yards, and out of bounds at the 2. And overall, for Pinion, he had a 45.8 net, not just his average, his net, all right? Which he didn't allow any returns anyway, but like 45-yard net average, okay? 3 inside the 8-yard line. Pinion was a warrior last night. And the Bucs, I mean, you know, I poo-poo punting in general a lot of times. I say screw the field position, you know, keep the ball. But when you do need to punt, you might as well put him inside the 10-yard line. And he did that. Had a hell of a game. Jaden Mickens, who, you know, looked like they might go with Darden, and then they decided to go with Mickens for the first game at least as a return guy. And he actually got a few. I mean, a lot of these returns are just touchbacks, but he brought a couple out past the 35-yard line. Whereas Dallas never got a return on a kickoff because Pinion was 6-for-6 on touchbacks. The Bucs did have, of course, the obligatory, just inane, dumbass, holding/illegal block on a special teams play. Because it literally seems like every week. I actually need to go back and look because I can't remember a Bucs game where we didn't have at least one penalty in the return game. And it's so dumb. I harp on it all the time because, again, these guys, they think – I would tell them as a special teams coach that your block is not that important. I mean – we want you to try and block. Sure, don't just let guys tackle. But mainly just get in the way. If you're blocking a guy and he looks like he's getting away from you, let him go. Just let him. Don't, you know, your block's not as important as you think. A lot of this stuff is random, bodies flying, hole opens and closes. It's not this supremely drawn up X's and O's stuff where I must hit this block this way. Just go out there and get in some people's way and keep your damn hands to yourself. I mean, fold them if you want to like a basketball player. Throwing a pick and stop because it's much more damaging to have the holding call or, you know, especially if they happen back there by the 20-yard line, then it's half the distance and then you're inside the 10. You know, what are you doing? Like, are you really going to get that? Would you get the guy get 2-3 more yards because you threw your block? Like, it doesn't make that much of a difference. And, you know, you're not seeing a lot of huge return plays, but you do see a lot of the penalties going the other way, and the Bucs seem to have one all the time. So that is one criticism. But overall, the special teams was outstanding last night, both in the kicking game and even in the return game. Oh, and the offensive line. Can't say enough about the offensive line. The offensive line, here's some numbers, okay? No sacks on 50-plus. I mean, Brady threw 50 passes, and there were a couple other, I think, dropbacks. So over 50 dropbacks total, no sacks. Over 60 plays in general, not a single tackle for loss. Tackles for loss are big, too, and preventing those is big. So the offensive line just did an outstanding job, and they had, I mean, the Bucs in general had issues with penalties last night, but the offensive line, I think, had 3, which is okay. I mean, that's not, you know, excessively crazy or anything like that. So there was a lot of good, some not so good, but overall, the Bucs felt like they were in control of the game the entire time. And even when Dallas, even with the turnovers, even after the Godwin fumble, and Dallas getting the ball and having a chance to go down and making the field goal, at no point did I ever truly feel scared. I felt a little nervous, but never scared that we were going to lose the game. And, I mean, I actually mentally took my foot off the gas as a fan in the fourth quarter because I'm thinking, yeah, okay, we're going to go down here and put this in the end zone, you know, wrap this thing up, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's not really going to end a two-point game. Like, it's not going to be that way. And at no point will we trail. Like, none of those things entered my mind. Those things did happen. But at no point did the Bucs make you feel like they weren't prepared for the moment. So, and I forgot another positive. Seemed like a great crowd. I did not go to the game, but I was able to hear, like, you know, from where I was, I even hear the cannons fire, because I live in South Tampa, a few miles down Dale Mabry, and you can actually hear the cannon fire. The flyover was cool. I do have to demote YouTube TV. Let me say this real quick, because you guys know I've always been railing against broadcast delays, and that's why I'm a big cable guy. I'm not a cord cutter. People say cord cutting's all the rage, and I don't buy into it. I think it's a fad. I'm not saying it's a fad that's not going to last, but people try to sell you that it's better than cable. Just say, I don't want to pay so much, so I'm going to settle for an inferior product. Because there's streaming does not match cable. Don't give me any of that gump, okay? Because I watched at a friend's house. I have cable. Went to my buddy's house, who also lives in South Tampa. Watched at his house, YouTube TV. And we're watching the pregame, and they're doing all this and that. You know, they're singing the anthem. And I know there's a delay. I'm not dumb. I know that going in. But we heard this rumble in the distance. And even knowing there was a delay, because we don't live, you know, like MacDill goes right over South Tampa when they leave MacDill. Heard this engine rumble in the distance, and I said, surely that can't be the flyover yet, because they weren't even close. They didn't even start the anthem on TV. And I said, I know there's a delay, but this, see, that must be like, you know, maybe that's thunder in the distance, or maybe that's just a regular plane from Tampa International. That can't be the flyover. And then it went like right over the house. It went, and I was like, that's the flyover? And we're looking up at the TV. Like, we were on a solid minute to minute and a half delay on YouTube TV. That is unacceptable. So anybody who's like, well, I stream and it's the great. Look, again, it saves money, although increasingly it doesn't save that much money. But don't try and sell me that it's just as good as cable. It's not. I know cable's got a little bit of a delay on its own, but that's not nearly what it is on streaming. And YouTube TV's great. Okay, it's got the channels, except it doesn't have the rays and the lightning. But it buffers. Oh, it doesn't have a last channel button. We were trying to watch, I know I'm ranting now. We were trying to watch the US Open during the Bucks game commercials. And my buddy, you know, since we were his house, he's got the remote. And the Bucks game would go to commercial. He'd go to the guide. He'd scroll down from like channel 8 where the Bucks game was down to ESPN. And after like the first two or three times, we're finally like, look at him like, dude, you ever heard of the last channel button? Like, you don't have to go through the guide every time and punch the number. Like, just hit the get the Bucks game and the tennis, because the U.S. Open tennis is great. And I was like, go back and forth with one button click. Like, what are you doing? And he's like, well, I don't have a last channel button on this. I'm like, well, what do you mean you don't have a last channel button? He's like, I don't have that. I got to go through the guide. And I'm like, what? Like, literally in 1988, we had a last channel button. You don't have a last channel button? And every TV's different. I know, like, you know, that's not a YouTube TV thing specifically. Each TV comes with its own remote. Give me the standardized cable remote, okay? They've covered all that. Another reason cable is superior to streaming. And we're sitting here going through the guide. I mean, what are you... This is 2021! And anyway, so I had a little rant on streaming and things like that, because I thought that was a little bit of a party foul. I had to talk to my buddy afterwards, say, hey, look, man, a couple of the guys are concerned. We think you need to go back to cable. You know, Spectrum or Fios, that's up to you, or Frontier, whatever they call it. But we need you on board, because we can't be coming over here and having this. You know, it's not going to work. Not for sports. But anyway, I stayed off Twitter during the game, because if I go on Twitter, then, you know, I see the Bucks score a touchdown like 2 minutes before it happens. So just little things like that, if you want to put something else in the minus column. But great night for Tampa Bay. Great showcase on national TV. I thought the stadium looked great on TV. I thought the crowd sounded great on TV. I thought the B-roll shots going to and from commercial looked good. They had some shots of the park downtown. Julian B. Land had some Ebor shots, your obligatory beach shots. You know, Tampa always looks good. Tampa Bay area always looks good on TV. So I thought it was an overall good presentation of our area to the country. And, you know, as a native here and someone who's civic-minded, I pay attention to stuff like that whenever we're on national TV, which didn't used to be very often. So I'm always, like, looking at stuff like that. So I thought that was cool, too. So any thoughts you have, cushion, discussion, whatever it is, email me, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. It's B-O-B-B-Y-G-A-M-E-D-A-Y @yahoo.com on Twitter. You can always get me at Bobby Game Day. And with all that, I guess that's that for the week. We did it, folks. We're no longer looking forward to football season. We are in football season. College and pro, high school, it's all going on. So we'll be back next week. Like, you know, Thursday I'll do a show. We've already talked about this Dallas game. We'll look ahead to the Atlanta game on Thursday. Anything that happens in between, like I said, email, tweet at me, all that good stuff. And in the meantime, hey, it's good to be 1-0. What's the best thing about being 1-0? You have a chance to go 2-0. It's as simple as that. It's early. Don't draw too many conclusions. Don't get too high or too low, just 1 week at a time. But a good start for your Tampa Bay Buccaneers getting the first win of the season. So with that, thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford for sponsoring the show. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform to get in front of all of you here on JoeBucksFan.com. If you still want a fridge schedule, I can email you one you can print out. BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com. It's not too late. Until then, have a great weekend. Enjoy everything. All the other games besides the Bucks and everything else. And I'll be back next week. And wherever you are, today more than ever, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.
Stay.